Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by John.
Hello.
And I am Josh. And what we are going to do is talk about the country of Ukraine and do a bit of a profile on it. And in the previous country profiles, we've looked at the culture, but I feel like the history and politics side of things is going to be forefront because it is current news. And maybe, you know, by the time you're watching this, because we're recording this on the 23rd of February, Ukraine no longer exists, so you can tell us from the future whether the country actually is still there. How's it looking? Does it still have the same borders? Who knows?
How many times has Russia invaded / not invaded between now and the uploading of this podcast?
It'll probably be exactly the same. That's what I'm calling.
Okay.
However, this is going to look really bad if everyone has the power of hindsight.
Throwing your prediction in there.
So what we're looking at here is just a map of Ukraine in Europe, as you can see.
It's Eastern colossal, Europe. Isn't it?
It's quite a big country, yeah.
It's bigger than France or Germany or Poland.
And obviously it's bordering Russia, which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Also, there you can see the map labels the Crimea still, which is that little, I suppose, island. It's not really an island, but it's peninsula, just off of the coast there in the Black Sea. So we're going to move on to some of the regions, have a little bit of a closer look here. So the country is split up into Eastern Ukraine, which I think is largely Russified, if you will. And then you've got Western Ukraine on the other side, believe it or not. And then Central Ukraine and Southern Ukraine. And then the Crimea is a separate thing here. And they've kind of put it in yellow to indicate that it's got a claim, but not quite.
But Southern Ukraine has a large chunk of coastline, which is stretching down towards Romania, which I find quite interesting as well. That region was quite relevant in the Second World War, seeing as Stalin basically strong-armed territory in that region out of Hitler. But yeah.
Yeah, so obviously having access to the Mediterranean is something that's very useful and is something that
it's not the Mediterranean. Well, I suppose it is.
Yeah, you have the Black Sea. Through the Black Sea.
Right, I was going to say. Oh, sorry, we just I was reading an article about Liz Truss getting her geography all wrong, so I was sensitive to that. But no, you're absolutely right.
No. But what I was going to say was that part of the reason there was a war in Crimea between Britain and Russia was that Russia wanted a port that didn't ice over in the winter. And that's, of course, what the Ukrainians have. And probably the same reason Russia's so keen to get the Crimea now, although they do have other ports and ships that can go through the ice, but still. It's a desirable location.
Well, it's a strategic, it's essential, vitally, it's a strategic necessity to have a warm water port. And that is and always has been for Russia and its various incarnations, Sevastopol and the Crimea.
And of course, we can see in the middle of the map, Kiev is the capital. And I think that that's a very historic city, not only for Ukrainian history, but for Russian history as well, because, of course, as you'll know from my Russia country profile, we covered the history in great detail there because we split it into two parts. We talk about the Kievan Rus and how modern-day Russia is somewhat of a continuity of that, which, of course, was based in Kiev.
Yeah, and curiously enough, that was the point which Vladimir Putin made in his infamous speech last Monday. He basically said that that Russia is a continuity of Ukrainian history and vice versa and so on and so forth, that it dates back to the Kievan Rus. And interestingly enough, the American embassy, I believe it was, ended up shooting themselves in the foot by posting a post of what Kiev and Moscow looked like at 900 AD, 1000 AD.
Is this the one where they had Moscow is just a forest.
Yeah, and they were basically mocking the Russians, being like, haha, you have no history, whereas Ukraine had loads. And it's like, yeah, but you idiots. Russia, like, self-consciously understands that it evolved out of the Kievan Rus. That's their history. I know you're just picking up a geography textbook for the first time in your lives. For goodness sake, get this right.
That was quite embarrassing.
It was.
Oh, dear. So, moving on to an ethno-linguistic map of Ukraine. So, if you could take a look at this, you can see the interesting combination of languages here, which I think I brought up not because I'm especially interested in linguistics, although unfortunately I've had the misfortune of having studied some of it. But what we can see here is in the kind of north western side, you've got mostly Ukrainian speaking, and then you've got combinations all around the other side. So to the kind of northern side, you've got predominantly Ukrainian speaking, which is like the most Ukrainian part of Ukraine. Then moving down, you've kind of got on that eastern side, you've got mostly Russian speaking, and it also points out significant ethnic Russian population. And then you go down to the Crimea, ethnic Russian majority. But it's not quite as significant as towards the east.
But you can really see here why, for example, when Crimea was taken by Russia, it did cause an international incident, but a lot of people were basically of the attitude, well, and when you look at this map, you see that it's majority ethnic Russian, Russian-speaking, et cetera, et cetera. And there doesn't seem to be too much of a contradiction between the Russian state seizing a territory which has an ethnic Russian minority and has been part of Russian history for 1,000 years. So you could tell why a lot of people weren't particularly bothered by that.
To be fair, the only true claim to the Crimea is that of the British Empire, and anyone else is a pretender. That's my wholehearted opinion. So
I don't think we ever actually claimed the Crimea in the Crimean War, did we?
I don't know. I don't think we actually did.
No, I think we went there ostensibly to protect Turkey.
Yeah, weird how that turned out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Against the Russians. But anyway, obviously you can see here along sort of the western and southerly border there, you've got ethnic Romanians, Moldovans, Hungarians, Bulgarians. You've also got in the kind of southwestern side, you've got Russians or Carpathian Ukrainians.
Yeah, there's a whole region there, Ruthenia, Carpathia, Galicia, which has a very tangled history because it's in the intersection of all these different minorities, and it's been its own state briefly at times, and then it's been Polish, and then it's been so on and so forth.
But the main purpose of me bringing this up is that it casts a wide net, the nation of Ukraine, doesn't it? I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's unreasonable.
There's a lot of minorities in this region.
Yeah, there's lots of different ethnicities, lots of different languages. And if you were to draw up a border, you could certainly catch the mostly Ukrainian-speaking people in quite a neat border. However, some of the other regions around the kind of periphery, particularly on the eastern side, don't necessarily...
No, it does look like a well, Putin's claim is that it's a historical accident that these are the state borders of Ukraine. And again, when you look at the ethnic and linguistic maps of it, it's not a point without any grounding.
It was it's largely given a lot of this territory after the February the November Revolution, wasn't it, of 1917. I think the Crimea was.
Well, we actually have a map, which I think you've put in here, of the territorial evolution of...
I do, yeah. In fact, we can move on to that now. So here we are, exactly what I was talking about. So the green there on screen, sorry if you're listening, it's very difficult to describe these sorts of things. But the green here is kind of the main central part of Ukraine, and that's... the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, and this is between the years 1922 to 54, just so we can see where this territory has come from. And you get some Polish territory in 1939 added to Ukraine on the western side. 1940, you get a little bit of Romanian territory. Mm-hmm. 1945, you get a little bit of Czechoslovak, Ruthenia in that,
yep,
that western southern part. And then you 1948, you just get some Romanian islands, which you can just see on the coast of the Black tiny. Coast, tiny little islands. And then 1954, you get Crimea.
Transferred by Khrushchev, who I believe was Ukrainian. But he was funny, the though. Premier of the USSR at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing which this doesn't notice, and this is a Russian claim, I believe, is that the original size of this large green Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic was a result of the politics surrounding essentially Russia's capitulation to Germany in the First World War and the beginning of the Russian Civil War. So it's not necessarily the case that these represent natural or historical borders, but they just sort of appeared as part of a treaty.
They're more diplomatic borders, really. Yeah. So if we move on to possible routes for an alleged invasion, here we go. This is interesting. I mean, if this has happened already, you can tell us which route was the one which they took. That wouldn't really surprise me. That would be a good move to spread them out, because, of course, they outnumber them.
That's true, but don't you also want a strategic concentration of force? But then they have so many troops massed on the borders, they're almost too concentrated, if anything. So
that's kind of what I thought. But obviously, they can launch attacks from the Crimean Peninsula itself onto kind of the more mainland, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
There, obviously, from the whole eastern side and through Belarus as well, who is more or less Russia's. Would it be fair to call them a puppet? Yeah, that's the word I was going to use.
Lukashenko was literally like, why can't Putin give me a colonelship in the Russian army? So I think it's fair to say that they're a puppet. Lukashenko being the Belarusian premier. Mm-hmm. He's been a dictator there for about 30 years.
I think so. He also looks suspiciously like a used car salesman.
He's a great character. I was watching an episode of Sluga Naroda, which is the drama which the current Ukrainian president was the main character in, which is about Ukrainian politics. And there's a scene where, as he's being shown through all of his staff in the palace, he's introduced to his body double, who is apparently for sniper bullets, police doubles, and drinks with Lukashenko. So like, Lukashenko is a bit of a meme in Eastern Europe, I think, being a bit of a bore. There we go.
I thought the drinks with Lukashenko would be you get poisoned or something.
Maybe.
But we're going to move on to some stuff that is less focused on invasion. Here is a topographical map.
It's a lot more hilly than it looks.
I know,
it was quite flat.
You've got the Carpathian Mountains in that southwestern corner. You can see them stretching into what I believe is Romania down there. And obviously you've got the highlands on that western side, and then you move slowly east and it's a bit less hilly. I think it's a bit more flat, a bit more like steppe land, which coincidentally there is a lot of in Ukraine. Particularly, you can see that all of the green is more or less steppe land that you can see in the borders of Ukraine, which of course is grassland. And as you pointed out, we've got the Dnieper River kind of dissecting the country almost in two, into not quite equal portions, but
very natural physical boundary. If borders were to be rearranged,
don't give them ideas. The green parts are the Pontic Caspian Steppe, and this, of course, is known for Scythians, horse archers, Asian nomads. That sort of thing, all passed through that land, which is why Ukrainian history is so full of wars with the East, funnily enough. And of course, the northern parts have marshes, sort of around Pripyat, which is right on the border with Belarus,
right
up that way.
Isn't Chernobyl up there as well somewhere?
Yes. Well, makes sense that it's close to Pripyat.
Yeah.
But we'll get onto that. So here's a nice picture of the Ukrainian Carpathians.
Whoa, look at that.
very nice. Makes me really want to visit and stay in a nice cabin.
Go hunting bears.
Yeah, get eaten by a bear. I've seen The Revenant. I really don't want that to happen. And here's a picture of the Dnieper River running past Kiev, which gives you both a sense of what Kiev is like and the river as well. I mean, looking at a river, they all kind of look the same.
Yeah.
So it's not the most exciting, but there it is. And then one more thing is just a picture that was titled Beauty of Nature in Ukraine. And I thought that it would be nice to include that, which I have to put up in post.
Okay.
So moving on to some architecture.
Mm-hmm.
This is...
While it's still standing.
Yeah. Here is...
Probably gets leveled by artillery.
Here is an example of what the Russian Orthodox architecture actually looks like.
Wow, that is amazing.
It's a lovely building, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And if we move on to...
It looks like something you'd have on a Christmas or on a postcard or something like that. Maybe in a little snow globe.
I always find that it's interesting that in lots of kind of Eastern Orthodox countries, particularly Russia, Ukraine, mm-hmm. they always have these kind of pale, like mint colours for buildings. Mm. Like they have it for their palaces, like these light blues or light greens. And we'll see a lot of that. And it's a very different choice of colour than you might find in the West, which I know is a very superficial point, but it's just one thing that's really stark. So if we move on to the one of St. Sophia's Cathedral, this was built in the 11th century.
Are there enough minarets on that?
No, I don't think so. You've got to have all of them. But this was built in the 11th century, named after the Hagia Sophia, or Holy Wisdom, the cathedral in Constantinople.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to call it Istanbul. It is Constantinople.
Yeah.
I said it right the first time. Don't know what's wrong with me. And it's spent a long time in disrepair, and I think it was only relatively recently in the past few years that they made sure it was renovated and looks somewhat presentable. But the Soviets wanted to turn it into a museum, and it spent a lot of time basically dormant in various states of dilapidation. So it's good to see it look somewhat presentable, although those weird red brick parts at the front kind of look like it's just been filled in.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite look right, but maybe that's part of the restoration. I don't know.
Yeah.
So if we have a look inside, it's rather nice, put it lightly. Very gold. Obviously, lots of pictures of saints up on the walls.
It's an iconic photo.
Mm. It seems like a nice place to visit. And then we've got another one as well.
Yep.
There we go. And you can see a bit more of some of the saints on the walls and the nice kind of almost medieval looking tapestry. I don't know what to call them, really. Are they murals?
I suppose murals is right, yeah.
They're not tapestries because that's got to be cloth, isn't it?
Mm.
And another...
It's basically fancy wallpaper, so murals.
And then moving on to another church. Here we have St. Andrew's Church, which I believe was the one we looked at earlier, but from the street, so we get a bit more of a view of some of the other architecture as well, and what Kiev actually looks like.
Well, the nice parts of it, anyway.
Yeah, but obviously you can see kind of almost a little bit of Austrian sort of architectural influence there in the bottom left, on that yellow building, and then you've got very garish yellow, what looks like an apartment block there. And I believe that Ukraine also, they took loads of their kind of Soviet-era tower blocks and they painted them all sorts of various bright colours. And now they... It's the same sort of weird juxtaposition as seeing a bearded man with loads of makeup on or something like that. It's like a really bad passing transgender person where you just look at it, it just doesn't look right. It's just like... This is like horrible, brutalist apartment buildings, and you painted it like bright pink. And it's like, this doesn't go together well. Mm. But that's something that I thought I'd mention there with the bright colours. They like their bright colours, it seems.
I've been to those, when I was in Hungary, I stayed in a hostel, which is in one of those old architect, old brutalist style blocks, and they are very strange. And one of the strangest things is that all of the windows are barred and all of the doors are pretty heavy duty. And I presume that's a hangover from the Soviet period. But yeah.
So even if you're quite high up, are they still barred?
I believe so, yeah.
What would the purpose of that be? You get some...
It was just strange.
Spider slav climbing up and breaking into your apartment.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, dear. So moving on to something a little bit different. We've got the facade of the National Bank in building in Ukraine. It's looking a little bit more European. It kind of, again, kind of has that little bit of Austrian decadence to it, doesn't it? And is it still loading up?
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's very much Austrian decadence.
There we go. So it's obviously a very different architectural style from the Orthodox sort of religious-inspired thing. And of course, this being a financial building, it's kind of a temple of its own, isn't it?
I suppose so.
I forgot who said the quote, but you can judge a lot by a culture by their tallest building.
Mm.
And I think that goes also for decadent buildings as well.
Mm-hmm.
So final thing I wanted to look at is one thing that it's very much known for is the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. There we go. Looking pretty grim and in disrepair. It's not a place I'd particularly want to visit. But moving on to a photo of Pripyat as well. There we go.
Gosh.
There's something grim and depressing for you. Yeah, I think you can visit Pripyat now, although I'd recommend bringing a Geiger counter.
Well, why would you bring a Geiger counter? You just have that annoying crackle in your ears all the time.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.